Jane, I want to turn our attention now to colour, the other half of your essay that introduces this wonderful book, Power and Colour. For those of you that have just joined us, we are talking about Power and Colour, which is the book that documents the collection, the Indigenous collection of Patrick Corrigan, who's also my guest here in the studio. And it is a group of 129 works that have been produced since the year 2000. So we're actually exploring Power and Colour, which are the flip sides of the rationale behind the collection. Jane, in terms of colour, I mean, you just have to flip through this book and see these splendid colours just leap out at you. And you're smiling there, Patrick. I guess this is part of the charm and the appeal.
Absolutely.
Yeah, when Jane said that your response is primarily emotional, I can see why you can fall in love. But as somebody who hasn't spent a lot of time in the desert, but the colours, these vivid, vivid colours, don't relate to anything that I've ever seen.
Well, firstly, there are desert colours that people don't see because they're not used to seeing them. Just as when Monet painted lilac trees back in the 19th century, people were horrified at the Academy. They're, you know, leaves aren't violet, they're green. But if you actually take the time to look closely, you do see incredible variations of shade in leaves. They are not all green at all. And as it is with country, if you wander through the desert and you actually take the time to look instead of, you know, looking ahead where the Land Rover is going, perhaps, or whatever, you see a vast array of colour. So that's one element of it. However, the colours that are used by many of the artists in the book are not, they're not meant to be realist.
This is the issue that I wanted to come to, because obviously then when we're talking about the colour, we're not, it's not so much a physical representation.
No.
We're talking about an understanding of country.
Yes.
That I think I hadn't quite understood. And I wondered if you would explain to us, you explain it very well in your essay, of what country is, so that we can understand that the colour of country doesn't actually represent
land.
The land itself.
Well, Mick Dodson, I'm going to honour his name here. He came up with a lovely, I think, definition of country that I'm going to paraphrase. He said that in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures, the meaning of country extends beyond a place on a map, such as a physical homeland, tribal or clan area, and that country describes the entirety of ancestral domains, and the word references all the values, places, resources, stories, and cultural obligations associated with an area and its features, including Aboriginal law, or Jokapa, as we talked about it being called in the first interview, and as it's more commonly known to broader Australians, the Dreaming.
Right, and the other thing that I like that you're explaining that also helps us understand these vivid colours is that a country in Aboriginal terms becomes personified. So you talk about a country being able to weep.
Yes.
Or a country being able to rejoice. Or a country being able to have feelings.
And be sorry, yes. And have a soul. It's the connection between Aboriginal people and country is that palpable physical connection. And for many non-Indigenous Australians, it's the same. That's why people get homesick. You know, there are strong pulls between place and people.
Yes, but in our terms, we don't personify our land.
No, we don't.
And we don't have our home crying for us. It's us
crying
for our home.
Although, I must say, conversely, there are a number of self-portraits in the Australian contemporary art canon that are landscapes. People like John Olson and, he did a lot of seascapes and cityscapes where he calls himself portraits, but they're physically works that look like abstract paintings of a landscape.
Right.
And
to fully understand it, you'd need to buy the book.
Absolutely.
And then,
as we said, Patrick's the salesman in the family this morning.
Yes.
And they are available at the best bookshop in Sydney, which is in Newtown. It's called Better Red Than Dead.
Yes, it's true.
And it's next to the Dendy Cinema.
Right.
Yes, and all good bookstores.
And at all good bookstores. But before we finish the commercial, I want to come back to these metaphysical aspects of country, because I think that will help us understand how we actually look at the pictures. One of the things that you talk about in your essay is Ginger Wiglieri's painting of vibrant pink squares, and you quote what he said. Mm. He said that it showed the sound of moonlight
hitting the ground
by night.
Yes.
Now, if pink squares
then
it's a metaphysical concept that we are never, ever really going to understand, are we?
Well, no, I mean, you only have to think about Rothko and his use of colour for transmitting a message. The same thing occurs with a number of these Aboriginal artists working in contemporary modes, including people like Sally Gabori, who is an artist from Bentinck Island up in the Gulf of Carpentaria, and her use of colour is strongly driven by memory. But it's also used to define physical features in her paintings, but they're not realistically applied. You know, you don't have brown for rocks and blue for ocean. And the colour application comes from a place of memory and a place of emotion.
Yeah, which is so that fits very neatly into the concept of abstract art.
Yeah.
Patrick, I want to come back and talk to you now. We've got 129 works. They've now been documented in this fabulous, fabulous book. Where does the collection go from here? Are you still collecting?
He never stops.
This is not, by the way, this is not the collection. It's highlights from the collection.
So 129 pictures here are highlights. How big is the collection itself?
It would probably be...
Aboriginal?
800 pieces.
800 of the Aboriginal collection. You know, I have this vision of keeping 800 pictures clean. Where do you keep them all?
Yeah, well,
you don't hang them all in your house,
oil
do you?
Paintings. No, they're mainly on view at two universities, University of Technology and Bond University.
So that's how you manage your collection, by lending it out to institutes, more and more people can actually have a look at it.
That's right.
And you're still continuing to purchase?
Sort of. I'm having a little breather at the moment while the books are being produced.
But you intend it to be ongoing?
He's not going to stop.
Ongoing and culling at the same time.
Yes.
I think that's very important, this concept of culling, that once you get to a point where you say, well, this is no longer interesting me, you sell it and keep collecting in the area that
it's
does.
It's a very hard thing to do, and it's not quite as easy. It's not interesting you. It's just that you find that all of a sudden you've got, there's a very good artist called Ninga and Naparula, and you find that you've got 12 Ninga Naparulas, and it's saying maybe we should get by with 11 and just finding one. There's nothing wrong with that 12th one, but it's just the best of the best of the 11, and the 12th one misses out, and in nearly every case that 12th picture goes to an institution. Currently there are five pieces, not from this book, but five pieces from my collection, going to the University of Queensland Art Museum as we speak. Yeah.
And that's part of the philanthropy, which I think you know, you're most well known for, more than for your collecting of art, is your generosity to just so many causes. So a part of that generosity...
Well, I get a lot of satisfaction, a lot of fun out of that.
Well, I think there are a lot of people that get a lot of benefit from that too, and I think part of the generous things you've done is coming onto Eastside Radio to talk to us this morning with Jane. We've enjoyed meeting you.
Thank you.
Jane, we thank you very much.
Thanks,
as well as always for a wonderful Arts Monday, especially for coming on and talking to us.
Oh, it's fun being on the other side of the microphone.
For a change. Yeah. That's been my special guest, Jane Raffin and Patrick Corrigan, talking about power and colour.